Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This Wednesday, we'll be having a debate with the pastor from Loveland, Pastor John Stocker of Resurrection Fellowship, on whether the earth is young or old. He did a week of shows recently saying that the earth is not young and taking us young earthers to task, so that'll be good. We will look forward to that interview, that debate. It'll be fun. Okay, what else? The past few shows, I hosted a debate, or participated in the debate, with the president of Wyoming's Right to Life, Stephen Ertel, and Brian Rohrbaugh, president of Colorado Right to Life, regarding that Fetal Pain Awareness Act in Washington that thankfully it failed. So we did that really four shows in a row, three on the internet. So if you have thoughts on that, I'm going to invite you to call in. And then also the news on the East Coast about the Taco Bell's closing because of E. coli. And that reminds me of what happened, the Taco Bell story with Bob Enyart Live when we first went on the air back in the early 90s. And this was a weird story. I got to tell you guys, because it was typical of the kinds of bizarre Twilight Zone things that were happening back in the early 90s regarding homosexuality and the media and the health department in Colorado and elsewhere. Well, a young couple, married couple, that listened regularly to this show, Bob Enyart Live, they were eating at a Taco Bell in Denver. And at the time, they called in, they told the story, husband and wife, and they said which Taco Bell it was. And now it's years later, so I'm not going to remind people which Taco Bell it was. But they said they had the table that was closest to the men's room. And so they're eating lunch, and a worker went into the men's room. All right, fine. You hardly even notice that. But then just a moment later, an assistant manager, another worker, went into the men's room. And they thought that was weird because it was a small men's room, like just for one. And the door was locked. And then they heard weird sounds emanating from the men's room, such that they knew what was going on in the men's room. And it grossed them out. It grossed them out. At the time, there had been another outbreak. Oh, brother, that story was so disgusting. I don't even want to get into it. But there was another outbreak in Denver from a caterer. And I could tell you that whole story, but it's too gross. Anyway, that was recently in the news. So they thought, this is so gross, we're going to call the health department and we'll call Bob Enyart Live. So they called the health department to complain that two workers at the Taco Bell are having intimate relations in the men's room. And that's really gross. That was their point. It was gross. So the health department, it's unbelievable. It was as though this couple who listened to my show, the married couple, it's as though they were punished and the health department never contacted the Taco Bell, as far as we know. The Denver Department of Health criticized this married couple for being ignorant. They didn't criticize the Taco Bell. That was fine with them. They criticized this couple, this married couple, saying, you guys should take an AIDS awareness class. You need an AIDS education class. But the Taco Bell? No, they didn't have. Apparently, they had no problem whatsoever. That should be a violation. You don't do that while on duty in a public place, in a restaurant, the people who serve the food, no less. They were astonished. They thought the health department would want to make a call, talk to the manager of that Taco Bell, perhaps a regional manager, and say, of course, this violates health code. It violates law anyway, that kind of behavior in a public place. And it certainly violates health policy, health code, and hopefully it would violate Taco Bell's own employee policy. Anyway, the Denver Department of Health chastised this young couple and said, here's what should happen. You two should take an AIDS education class. They were just beside themselves. They couldn't believe it. So, hey, morality has a lot to do with public health, of course, and even in the most bizarre ways. Like this, for instance, like this. Okay. So the other story had to do with the dribbler. I don't want to tell that story. That's just too gross of a story. It was a guy who did the pastries at a very popular catering service in Denver back in the 90s. And that guy happened to be a homosexual. And this was hepatitis. People were getting hepatitis from this caterer. And they tracked it down to the guy that we called at the time the dribbler. And he would decorate the pastries. And he would take the icing in his hands and squeeze it out over the pastries. And we found out from people working there, we found out, yes, he was a homosexual. And he would decorate with the icing, dribbling it off his fingertips onto the pastries. And customers were getting hepatitis. It was pretty gross. And at the time, there was an epidemic of problems like this spreading in the homosexual community and through the homosexual community around the country. And so hopefully some of that has died down, but it's still gross. So your thoughts, what are your thoughts on the debate between Brian Rohrbaugh of Colorado Right to Life and Stephen Ertelt of Wyoming Right to Life? So we'll be happy to take your calls at 1-800-836-9278. That's 800-8-NYART. Now, to start with, a call from a dear friend of Bob and Yurt Live, Joe Scott. Joe, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So you heard the debate, huh?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Well, tell me your thoughts. It was on the Fetal Pain Awareness Act, National Right to Life, Concerned Women for America. A number of Republicans were advocating that we pass this law that abortionists would tell women, your baby might feel pain after 20 weeks, and so if you'd like, we could give the baby a painkiller.
Unbelievable. These people are so disconnected, Bob. Mm. You know, at the abortion mill, when I'm talking to the women, every once in a while I'll get a Christian girl going in, and she'll say, well, I'm just giving my baby back to Jesus.
Oh, no.
And I say, no, you're not. You're torturing your baby to death, and you're spitting in God's face. You don't kill your child and think it's a good thing.
Right.
And now...
Yeah, that's like human sacrifice. We give the kids, we kill our kids, and we offer them to God or the gods in hopes of having a better life. So actually, there are actually Christian women who go in to have abortions, aren't there?
Right. From, there's a lot of Christian women that go in to have abortions.
Yeah, from all kinds of churches. And
that's correct.
And we've had many opportunities over the years to interact with some of these Christian women. And the stories that you get from some are just extraordinary and astounding and devastating. But for one, they're looking for excuses to justify their guilty conscience of why they're going to kill their baby.
Right, and God will forgive me, and all these different crazy answers I get. But when she's telling me she's just going to give her baby back to Jesus, and she's told that she can have the baby put to death with a painkiller, you know, what do I do then? You know, it's not that I want the baby to have pain. It's the fact that this will kill more children. Now, I don't understand why Steve couldn't see that.
Stephen Ertelt, the publisher of LifeNews.com and president of Wyoming Right to Life, was arguing, and it was somewhat stunning to hear it.
It was unbelievable. I could not.
You know, but what's really fascinating is this is not an anomaly. This is typical of those pro-life leaders, which most of them are in this camp, where they will justify compromise legislation on regulating the killing of unborn children, and they will not. They are determined to not consider any possible downside. It is utter denial. So Steve Ertelt could not even admit that some women, even possibly, he could not admit that some women would possibly use the painkiller as a justification to go ahead and have an abortion.
My take on it, Bob, is that they're so disconnected from the real world. They're never out on the street dealing with the women that are really going in for abortion, or they would never come up with something like this.
Yeah, you know, the pro-life community does have schisms, and one of the big schisms is between the activists who go on the street, you know, once a week or 5 days a week or twice a month for years, year after year after year, and then the pro-life movement that is either in a crisis pregnancy center or in an office heading up some kind of a ministry.
Yeah, they're behind a desk.
Yeah, and that's fine. It's fine to fight the battle, you know, wherever, on whichever front, whichever battlefield. But if you're not fighting it in the streets, on the front line, at the abortion clinic, you could be less aware of the dynamics of the actual battle, what really takes place in the hearts and minds of the abortionists, the clinic workers, the women going to kill their babies.
Right.
And so what apparently many who advocate these compromise bills, legislation, what they don't realize is that women are looking for excuses to justify their decision to kill their baby. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah, so when you say, well, we'll give your baby a painkiller, National Right to Life and Concerned Women for America have gotten together with some Republicans, and they've decided that we're going to make it a law that the abortionist has to offer a painkiller for your baby.
The other thing I don't understand, Bob, is even though they're not out on the street and they don't see what really goes on, how can they think that that's going to make things better?
Well,
it's like saying, okay, let's just give the criminal a lethal injection and it's okay. I mean, this is an innocent child, obviously. But,
right. Well, of course, what they're hoping is that they're hoping, and Brian Rohrbaugh admitted this openly, and that's what I see the difference so often in a debate between someone who has truth on their side and someone who does not, is that when you have truth on your side and someone points out a good argument against your position, you could say, you know what, there's some evidence there. There is a point there. That's a good point. Let's deal with that. So Brian Rohrbaugh said, of course, some women would hear about this and think, wow, my baby could feel pain. I'm not going to have an abortion. And so that's as far as National Right to Life will take it. They only take it that far. But then when they go to solve the problem, when they tell women, your baby can feel pain, but then they go to solve the problem, and the solution is the abortionist, we will authorize, in fact, will mandate that the abortionist give you painkiller for your baby if you would like it. They point out the problem, that's good, and then they offer a solution to the problem so that they can have a pain-free abortion. And that's where they are so blinded by their competitive zeal to fight, you know, the liberals in Congress and get another law passed. They're so blinded by that desire of the flesh to gain another score before the end of the year that they don't even consider the possible downside.
Right. It's like the parental consent bill.
Yeah, parental
consent. Time ever in the United States where the general public can sign death warrants.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And when we say that these laws help further entrench abortion into our culture, and then the other side, and think of virtually any major pro-life organization except for Judy Brown's American Life League and Flip Benham's Operation Save America and Colorado Right to Life, but the vast majority of pro-life groups, it's as though they haven't considered that getting millions of people to vote for laws and candidates that regulate abortion, it's as though that can have no possible downside. Well, one possible downside is that it makes the public think that these laws are reasonable because we've been voting for these laws for 25 years.
You know, on the street, lots of times missionary groups will come through Colorado and they'll bring their group to Planned Parenthood where I am, and I get to talk to them. And do you know that most of the Christians that I talk to think that the ban against partial birth abortion ends late-term abortion?
In other words, they think that there would be no more late-term abortion if that ban took effect.
Right. They hear something like partial birth abortion ban. That's it. There's no more late-term abortion. They don't look in it at it any further.
Yeah.
You have to make them understand.
Our Focus on the Strategy DVD, in fact, we have a whole report of this online at our website. Our primary website is KGOV, KGOV.com, but we also have a sister site, ShadowGov, ShadowGOV.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a tab on there, Focus on the Strategy, and we talk all through this issue. And we gave a presentation, a Focus on the Strategy, to Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs last year, to James Dobson's VP of Public Policy, Tom Minery, and some of his crew. And we pointed out that partial birth abortion, the ban on partial birth abortion, I asked Tom Minery, if there are abortions scheduled when that ban goes into effect, how many of those abortions will have to be canceled? How many scheduled abortions would have to be stopped because that ban would take effect? And we talked through that for a couple minutes, and he agreed zero. Not one, because the abortionists are trained in more than one method of killing an unborn child.
So I can't wrap my brain around that, Bob. Why do they spend all the time and money about misinforming the public? They know they did it.
Well, in fact, Stephen Hertelt mentioned this, and I think they use this to justify laws that are compromise laws. When you compromise on do not murder, that's a bad law. Mm-hmm. And bad laws have bad consequences. But the way Steve brought this up, and I know the partial birth abortion crowd bring this up all the time, it's a way of getting publicity.
Right.
It's a way of getting publicity.
What happens. They can see what happens. Focus on the Family or Nora, anyone else came out and said, no child will be saved by partial birth abortion.
Yeah, that's what they should do. Focus on the Family should educate their donors, their listeners, their readers, and say, now we've been fighting this for 10 years, but we want to make it clear to you that not one scheduled abortion would be canceled if we finally pass this ban on partial birth abortion, because the abortionists will just kill the baby through another technique. Another method, but we're doing this in order to get the publicity to keep it in the headlines, the issue. And the sad thing about that is there are 1,000 ways to keep an issue in the headlines.
Right.
1,000 ways. And if we're going to take the most powerful argument against abortion that we will ever have, partial birth abortion, and how wicked it is, and if we are going to squander the blood of the kids who've been killed by partial birth abortion on a campaign that will not stop a single scheduled abortion, what a tragedy that we can't be smarter than that, wiser than that.
But we got publicity that misled everyone.
Right. It misled everyone. And Christians will donate a lot of money to, J Seculo or whichever group is fighting the fight, National Right to Life, because they think that this will save all those late-term babies. And that's just not true. That is such a fundamental piece of misinformation. And it's from our own camp.
I know.
So, all right. Well, it's rather frustrating, Joe, that Stephen Hertelt could not admit any possible downside. And, when you're dealing with somebody who's selling the Brooklyn Bridge, then they're not going to tell you any possible downsides. And you'll ask, well, how about this or how about that? And there will be no possible downside when you're getting ripped off from the person who's ripping you off, because they realize that if they admit to one possible weakness, the whole facade might collapse. And so that's not the behavior of a wise person who is objective and fighting the battle objectively. That's
the
behavior.
Are not bridges.
What's that?
The babies are not bridges. They're people who we need to have the utmost concern and wisdom about. I mean, we can't just use them for political fodder to further our agenda.
That's true. That's absolutely true. So if one of these groups said, hey, we've been pushing the partial birth abortion ban for 10 years because it keeps it in the headlines and we get more donations, well, then at least that would be honest.
Yeah.
At least that would be honest. But to make people think that this will stop the killing of any number of late-term babies is not true. And when the leaders have promoted so much misinformation about the battle, you have to realize that hurts the progress of the battle.
All right.
Thank you, Joe Scott.
Thanks, Bob.
Appreciate the call. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Now, regarding the debate with Stephen Ertelt and Brian Rohrbaugh from Manchester, Iowa, Quinn, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
It's North Manchester, Indiana.
I should have known that. From North Manchester, Indiana, Quinn, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
Hey, hello, Bob.
Hello, sir.
Hello. I was glad to hear the debate. I listened to all three shows.
All right.
Of the debate last night consecutively, and I was kind of stupefied that the whole idea that this argument that Ertelt that he had that basically if women know that their babies can be given an anesthetic that will get rid of the pain of them being slaughtered, that would reduce abortion. I couldn't believe it because one of the number one objections that I get, especially on my site, my survivors website, Northern Indiana Chapter Survivors website, is that babies don't feel pain when they're so young.
Mm.
And I get that over and over again. That has to be like at least within the top three objections. I say, well, hey, they're too young to feel pain.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
Not feeling pain is a justification of doing it.
Yeah, not feeling pain is a selling point for the pro-aborts to convince young women that abortion is okay.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So, you know, making it, letting people know that, yeah, we can do this, and at least, you know, when we do it now, they won't feel pain, that's somehow going to reduce abortions. It's not. There's just no way. I don't even see how he connects the dots to that.
Well, and you know what? If someone does the calculation and they say, okay, well, it may save some babies because some moms will think, oh, I didn't know my baby could feel pain. I'm not going to get an abortion. That's the one side of the equation. The other side is all those who will say, oh, you mean you give a painkiller to my baby? Sure, I'll have an abortion. That makes it an easier decision. That's the other side. And the advocates of this legislation who say it will save babies, by Stephen Ertelt's own admission, he's only considered the one side of the equation. He refuses on principle to even consider the other side. You know why? Because he says our intent is to save babies. Therefore, we cannot question our actions, and the ends justify the means.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, in my area, especially in northeast Indiana,
yeah,
a lot of people use the excuse, hey, they're not going to feel pain because they're so young. They're usually talking about babies that are, you know, 10 weeks old or not anywhere near 20 weeks old. And one of the reasons is because the paper in this area, the big paper, the Journal Gazette, they came out and they had a paper that basically supported abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just come out for it, but they explained why, you know, basically why people should be pro-abort.
Right.
Their big selling point, their number one reason, if I remember right, was, well, they're just not old enough to feel pain.
Right.
And that doesn't follow necessarily. If Tracy Warner, the editor of the Journal Gazette, if we shot him full of morphine and painkillers, it wouldn't make it okay to kill him.
Yeah, what a great point. And I don't know if you recall Stephen Ertel of Wyoming Right to Life. He objected when I said, hey, the general public will look at this as a way of making abortion more humane, late-term abortion, and it will even become more difficult then to get rid of late-term abortion. Because the general public would view it as more humane, and he argued that this law doesn't make it more humane. And Brian Rohrbaugh pointed out, Stephen, you were just saying it makes it more humane. It's nicer for the baby. And in the law itself, the law uses the word humane repeatedly.
Uh-huh.
The context that uses it, I think, is tragic. It points out that when we slaughter animals, we have a humane process. And we make sure that we minimize pain. And so it goes on for page after page of talking about when we slaughter animals, we do it in a humane way. Therefore, at least with babies, we should do it in a humane way. And they don't, I mean, it's just bizarre that they can't see that there's a negative consequence of all these regulatory laws making abortion appear more humane and more reasonable to the general public. Thank you, Quinn. I appreciate your call very much. Now we got to go to Denver, Colorado. Chester, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, Bob, I got a question for you. See if this makes any sense. I mean, I'm not a very smart man, but if there was a father who gave his son a condom and said, well, I know you're going to sit there and have sex, so just use this and everything will be all right, instead of rebuking the kid and telling him to have abstinence. And the kid, in his mind, is going to say, well, geez, my dad's saying it's okay to have sex.
Of course.
Now, how come Steve couldn't see that? I don't get it.
Because for 20 years they've been compromising on do not murder. And they've reached the point where they can't even fathom the possibility any longer that they're doing something wrong or that there might be negative consequences. For example, he basically saying, look, these kids are going to die. We got to make it less painful for them.
That's well, a compromise.
Well, yeah, but let's say rape. There's always been rape. What are we going to do with rape? Are we going to make it so it's less egregious, less horrific? Of course not, because that would be counterproductive. That would be destructive.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I guess they forgot about Proverbs 17:2, where it says, a wise man will listen to counsel, but he who compromises leads many astray.
Thank you so much, Chester. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school, Maranatha.